Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into Bartholomew Town's continuing coverage of the impact of COVID-19 here in Rhode Island. I'm Bill Bartholomew. On this episode, part one of our look at distance learning here in Rhode Island with Blackstone Valley Prep's Dave Jose.
I'm the Dean of College and Careers at Blackstone Valley Prep High School. I'm a founding team member for Blackstone Valley Prep High School. This is our sixth year in our third graduating class, which is really exciting. Yeah, you're right. This is a unique time to be trying to do school in general, just like trying to do school. Also trying to basically do guidance counseling, which is a lot of the work that we do, and college counseling. And a lot of what we're spending time is with seniors, with alumni, and then also making sure that our 9th through 11th graders are getting some attention and support as they transition to this. This is nobody signed up to be a distance learning guidance counselor, or distance learning dean, or anything like that. But sure, as we tell the kids, like, the kids didn't sign up to be distance learning students either, right? And so I think when you approach it with that attitude, that we're, none of us signed up for this, but this is sort of where we are, it's made it a little bit easier to set the tone of those types of conversations.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. It's suddenly we're in this moment, and what can we do to make the most of it? And what can we also use for a silver lining of sorts to sort of adjust things going forward potentially? Have you found that distance learning, distance guidance counseling, and planning has produced anything that might be carried forward after this crisis?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think there is an acknowledgement from our side that, like, our students are very technologically savvy and that they're used to using platforms, and the learning curve is probably shorter for a lot of them. But we've learned that, you know, you still need to provide some explanation and justification for why you're asking them to do what you're doing, right? And so, like, most of the work that I do is really with individual students in my office coming to talk about, where should I apply once I get in? Where should I go? How do I sell myself to colleges and those sorts of things? And I think we're able to have a lot of those conversations, and it's a lot easier to hold a calendar sacred during a distance learning environment. And what I mean by that is, in the hustle and bustle of a traditional day of school between lunch duty or this person needs help, it's a lot harder sometimes to hold the line for, I have a 10:30 meeting with this student, and it's a lot easier to do that from a distance learning perspective. I also think it's a little bit easier to get your undivided attention on a student in that sort of framework, because it is just you and them, or you and their, and them and their family. So those are two things I think that are silver lining. I think what's been helpful for us is, because we have 2 years of alumni now who are in college, we're able to connect them with some of our seniors because they're home now, and they're able to help sort of give their perspective. This is how I made the decision on where I'm going to college. And that might have been a little bit harder to do if they were on campus, wherever they were sort of attending. So utilizing those resources has been pretty helpful too.
Blackstone Valley Prep has been cited, and a lot of it's anecdotal, but as sort of setting a tone. And, you know, if you look at Cumberland as a public school district, you've seen the numbers rise. You've seen, just in general, the vibe around Cumberland High School, for example, it seems to have increased in real time as Blackstone Valley Prep has come into the region. That's, again, anecdotal. But it does seem like you guys have become trendsetters in Northern Rhode Island and broadly in the state. Are you doing anything right now that you can share with public schools or even other charters and private schools that is unique to your facility here in distance learning that you're seeing positive outcomes with?
That's a great question. I would start by saying, I think Cumberland High School is doing great work. Like, in the last, since I started at BVP 6 years ago, I've been able to collaborate with team members over there and just sort of talk to stuff. I think that it's good to have educational options. That's obviously why I work at Blackstone Valley Prep. But I would say from the outset, I'm really proud of the work that Cumberland High School is doing. From what we can share, I think we've really worked to sort of think about two things from a school-based perspective, and then maybe two things from a college sort of counseling perspective. From a school-based perspective, we're trying to simplify the line of communication between teacher, student, family. And we've literally put everything on. We built a Google website where literally all the students' assignments live, all the Zoom links live, all the recordings live, so students can go back there. I think we want to maintain a level of rigor and expectation while also acknowledging that it's not feasible for students to be attending live class every day when you're at home and you've got siblings who you're helping, right? And a lot of our seniors and juniors are helping teach fourth grade and fifth grade math to their siblings at the same time that they need to show up to their AP calculus class and their AP English class. And so we're trying to really strike a balance here between holding the rigor and holding the expectation of learning the content and the skills, while also acknowledging that some of that can't happen live. So we have to provide a bunch of ways where you can learn the material and practice. And so we reorganize our schedule. So the class itself only meets once a day, and then the class, or once a week rather, excuse me. And then the class also has an assigned office hour period where students can get additional support that they're not actually required to attend, but they can get a lot of extra questions answered, can do their work with the teacher support in a Zoom classroom setting, et cetera. So we've tried to create multiple meeting opportunities for them. So I think it's the first thing. I think we've been really, and I don't know if this isn't something necessarily that BVP is doing exclusively, but I think we've done a really good job at over-communicating to our families. We want everybody to be on the same page. When you transition specifically in a high school setting, right? Like 14, 15, 16-year-olds are a lot more often the direct contact for their education, as opposed to talking to a family about setting up a work schedule for home when you're dealing with some elementary schools or upper elementary school kids. And so we're trying to balance this idea of, listen, we're used to dealing directly with 16-year-olds in terms of setting goals and stuff like that. But families want to be informed. Families want to know how to best support their scholar, and they're not necessarily always able to support the content, but they can support with the structure. And so I think we've been really transparent and open sort of about that. We're looking to roll out some stuff from a college perspective. We're trying to do some YouTube explanation videos and a podcast with some of our alumni to give advice that's a little bit more widespread than just one-on-one conversations with our resources, because we have some time and we're all learning how to do podcasts or live streams on YouTube. And so we're trying to do that from a college perspective. And then I think the last piece is we're trying to really figure out a way to celebrate senior year. This is not the senior year that any of these kids signed up for. And we're trying really hard to figure out how do we make this special, knowing that a lot of the events that lead up to the end of senior year are what people have been waiting for 4 years. They've been super excited about prom and about what we have for college signing day and graduation. And we've really tried to think big picture about how to still maintain a level of celebration while also acknowledging that we need to be safe. And so I don't know, we don't have all the answers for that yet, but I think I'm really proud of the work we're doing, thinking out of the box with that.
Yeah, that's really fascinating and sad in a way to think about. Of course, these kids will also have the opportunity 20, 30, 100 years from now to be saying, wow, you know, it's like that we walked uphill both ways to school.
Exactly.
You know, that I'd hear from my dad or whatever mentality of, hey, look, you know, we went through this incredibly challenging time globally, and here's the outcome that we as an individual or as a class were able to produce. And at some point that may seem like, you know, wow, that wasn't such a bad hand to be dealt. It actually was kind of teed up maybe a certain type of response.
It's hard as an 18-year-old to maintain that perspective, right? Like as an 18-year-old, you think about, like, I'm so excited. Our college signing day is a big pep rally for, we have the entire school, all their families there. We bring the eighth grade. There were like 700 people in the gym last year, and everyone gets up to like a walk-up song. They all get hyped up by everyone and get up to declare where they're going next year, what they're doing. And we've worked really hard to make that this awesome event. Now, kids have been looking forward to it. We had kids in February signing up. This is the walk-up song I'm going to go up to. I already know I need extra tickets for this family member and that family member. And so it is hard sometimes it's hard for me. I mean, that's one of the biggest events. It's the biggest event for us for the year. And it goes months and months in planning. And then thinking about, like, yeah, you're going to have this amazing opportunity to look back and talk about the way you've grown because of your experience with this. the kids just want to celebrate. They worked really hard for 4 years, and where they go next year and what they do is something that is like this personal journey. And the celebration on May 1st for us was going to be a big deal. And so we've had a lot of conversations with seniors about like, listen, it's, you know, it stinks. It really does. Like, none of us are happy about this, but we need their investment in an alternative solution for the alternative solution to still be effective and good and memorable. If the seniors aren't invested in it, it doesn't matter. It's not worth it. So we've really worked on trying to build their investment in, and we promised them, like for prom, for example, like we promised them, we're going to figure out a way at some point in the future to give you guys a prom experience. So prom's not canceled. It's postponed. Now what that means is like prom's very unlikely to happen before you graduate. But we were talking to some alumni about like maybe having like an alumni formal weekend coming back in January. And as soon as it's safe and we're able to do it, we want to give them that experience. Again, it's not your typical senior prom. It's not the prom that happens right before graduation as the sort of last celebration with your friends. But the opportunity to still be together and celebrate each other as much as possible. So like we've used the word postponed and not canceled, or shifted and not canceled, as much as possible to help emphasize to the seniors and their families that we're committed to figuring out a way to do this as best as possible and as safe as possible.
Huge. Language is so huge right now, the way things are framed and the perspective that's taken. Something that's interesting you mentioned is using Zoom, using podcasts as an educational tool. This is something that I've been thinking about as well for, I think it was about a year ago that I gave a talk to a bunch of college and university heads about, you know, look, I had no idea what I was doing. I started a podcast. I was a musician. You know, I read a few articles and boom, next thing you know, you have something that's not tangible in the real world, but that people can buy into, so to speak.
Sure.
There was some interest, but there was also a lot of trepidation from these administrators about, well, the technology and will people actually care about it? So are you finding here, I know it's early probably, but in terms of creating podcasts and content that is, you know, typically media oriented or entertainment oriented, now education kind of slides into this broad world of content, and especially in distance learning, are you finding that that's a successful way to translate the information you're trying to get to the students?
So I think two things for that. First, I think giving information in a media format is helpful, particularly sometimes to our scholars who have IEPs or 504 plans, because they're able to pause the media, take notes, go back, rewind. And so being able to have that available to scholars from the start makes it really like, it makes me think about like, all right, well, when we're having lectures next year or whenever we're back in school, right? Like, how can we make sure we're recording them, right? Or videotaping them or doing something so that our scholars who need the opportunity to pause to do that, it's available to them. So that's one thing that like we've just talked about sort of anecdotally, wow, this is great for some of our kids who need things to slow down, who need them to have been bullet points. It's forced our teachers to be a lot more visual with instructions, right? Like having a Google slide as opposed to just giving instructions. So things are there. So that's a really helpful piece. I think the other thing from a guidance perspective is we find ourselves having the same conversation with students a lot. And so getting them into like a podcast format, and this is our quick webinar on how to fill out your FAFSA, or this is a understanding of the difference between a subsidized loan and an unsubsidized loan. It's hard sometimes as a college counselor, you get big group opportunities to tell students these things, or family meeting opportunities, but you don't always, like, we're basically having that same conversation 90 times in the college and career office all the time. So what's it like to record it, post it up there, say, hey, you guys are interested in learning about the difference between, you know, subsidized and unsubsidized loans, check out this podcast we did with an alumni who talked about why he took subsidized and why he didn't take unsubsidized loans, and then come back and we can have a little bit more of an informed discussion on it. So I think creating a content library about frequently asked questions and frequently sort of experienced parts of the college process could be really transformative for us as we think about how are we reaching every scholar and giving them the individualized sort of attention that they need. That's a big part of our college and career department, is trying to recognize that everyone is coming into the college process in a unique setting. And it's very hard to do one size fits all college counseling, because not just from a perspective of reach and safety schools, but from a family perspective, going to college is about celebrating achievements, but it's also about recognizing family limits around finances. And so helping everyone understand what those mean can make those conversations a little bit later on a little bit more informative and fruitful.
Last question, as far as administrators, teachers, How's your mental health? How are you holding up through all of this? I mean, I know some teachers right now, and I had the privilege of watching another school kind of, you know, basically full disclosure, one of my roommates is an educator. So I was able to kind of listen in on some of the things that he was doing. And look, the learning curve for Google Classroom, my sister is an educator in New Hampshire, and she actually teaches Google Classroom and has for years, two educators. It's not as if, you know, you wake up one morning and boom, you're doing distance learning. You guys have put in a ton of work. Yeah. What's that like? Are you exhausted?
I mean, yeah. So the short answer is I'm definitely exhausted, and I can speak for a lot of our teachers when I say I'm sure they're exhausted.
Yeah.
I would say our teachers who have kids at home are rock stars. They're amazing. They're honestly like trying to do, like, it's me and my dog, and it's exhausting for me. And I can't imagine doing this with a 2-year-old or twins or 5-year-old. You know, we have one of our teachers is like trying to run first grade math at the same time as they're trying to teach science. And there's a lot. So I think we've tried to, as administrators at the school, recognize that what we're asking teachers to do in terms of ramping up technology, teach from home, manage their own, like, we're asking so much. And so we've really tried to have an open door of communication, try to do things for teachers if we can, to try to streamline the process, make it more efficient, and just acknowledge, listen, it's like really hard. Like, this is hard. Like we said to the kids, like, this is incredible and it's not going to be perfect. And teachers so often prefer things to be perfect and in their control, right? It's a very common trait of an educator, right? And you have to step way outside your comfort zone in this setting and be like, you know what, this isn't going to be perfect, but we're going to do the best we can, and our kids are going to learn as much as they can in this scenario. And then we're going to use all these other fail safes. So like if a kid's not showing up for a live class, we've got a bunch of people who can call home. What's going on? Do you need internet? Is your computer not working? We were mailing home chargers for kids so that they could make sure that they were their Chromebooks were working. And I think it's a team effort, and it comes from assuming the best from everyone. And so from us, making sure our interactions with teachers are assuming the best, they're working as hard as they can, and assuming with the students. Listen, assume the best. Sometimes kids can be lazy. That's just the way it is. But most of the time, kids just want to do their best, right? And so, like, it's a balancing act. You want to motivate them and give them rigorous work while also recognizing that this is unprecedented and stressful. Like, I have to limit the amount of time I have CNN on, or I feel like my anxiety rises to a place where, like, I can't function, right? I'm somebody who likes to be informed. And, like, I literally will, like, have a stopwatch where it's, like, 20 minutes of CNN. That's it. And then I watch the governor, and then 20 minutes at night, and that's it. Because if it's too much, you can just, particularly because it's out of your control. Like, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's stressful. Oh, everyone's stressed, right? And so I think I'm just so impressed with our staff for working as hard as they can to really embrace this challenge. And I think, like, the governor gave 2 days off this week in the distance learning. So Thursday and Friday are days off. And we've really pushed our staff to be like, listen, we know you can't do much. You can't go many places, but really use this time for yourself and binge mode some awesome shows, or take some walks in the park, or play basketball in the street with your kids, or do something that's going to be for you, because it doesn't look like this is ending anytime soon. And if we're not operating through the lens of this needs to become more sustainable, we're going to be middle of May and a bunch of people are going to be too stressed to work, and a bunch of kids are going to be too stressed to turn anything in, and we're not going to have any evidence that this distance learning worked for these kids at this time. So
yeah, it does seem like a really smart move to go to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't know if is that a permanent? Well, permanent.
No, so she gave this week, she did Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday and Friday are days off. Next week, Friday is a professional development day for staff, which is nice. We kind of use that for planning, grading, and feedback for teachers. And I think that kind of mindset that the governor and the commissioner have taken, where, like, we're asking teachers to do so much, let's make sure that we're giving them the space and time to do that and also be healthy and stay safe, I think is important. And so if this ends up lasting longer than April 30th, and I think we all kind of feel like that's the direction we're headed in, I think having that as a framework for planning, hey, like, let's work in some day that's just for teachers to kind of just chill. This is a day just for teachers to do some PD and planning, and recognize that kids need that too, right? And I keep saying it, I've said it a few times here, and I say it a lot when we're talking to the staff, like, we have to assume the best with everyone. Like, we have to just operate with this sense of grace and flexibility that, like, everyone's working really hard. And it doesn't look like we want it to look like, and it doesn't look like what we prepared it to look like, but it doesn't mean it still can't be good for kids. And I think that's the sort of message that we've worked with. And it's the same message I'm giving seniors. This isn't the senior year you signed up for, but it's the senior year you have. And so you can either be upset that we're not having college signing day and graduation and prom, or you can help us plan an amazing virtual college signing day, help get excited about some version of alumni prom that we're going to have, and then make graduation awesome. Like, we have an opportunity to make something really memorable and different. And that goes back to your point before, when they can look back 10 years from now and say, remember when we did graduation completely virtually and we all filmed these videos and sent in, and we had like mini speeches from kids, and we sent out requests for guest speakers from politicians and entertainers, and we meshed it all together with this cool soundtrack. Like, it could be awesome. Like, it's not what we wanted, but it still could be awesome, right? And I think that that's the mindset that I keep trying to push with my staff and the school staff and our leadership team and the students. Like, it still could be awesome. It's not what we thought it was going to be, but it could still be awesome. And that's really what we're trying to push for.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.